So welcome back. Welcome back. I'm sure you've all had a very busy morning, meditating and reading, I'm convinced, right? Good. So we'll start as usual, you all know this, I know, but motivation is so important, really. And what helps the motivation is just the relaxation and the stability. So please put yourself in a position where you're comfortable, really comfortable. Straight back. Gentle eyes, opened or closed, just very gentle. Check the position of your head and your hands. And it's always good to begin by drawing the mind inward. We are so addicted to external sensory stimulus. So drawing the mind inward, paying attention to how your whole body is responding to each in-breath and out-breath. To each in-breath and out-breath. Allowing one part of your mind to gently scan your whole body, simply noting any areas of tension and continuing with the scan. And then in your own time, on the out-breath, breathe out all the tension. There's no effort required here. With each out-breath, any tension you've noted, let it go on the out-breath. And as the tension leaves the body naturally on the out-breath, notice the changes. The scalp relaxes, creating waves of relaxation, which gently cascade down the body and through the body. And on their journey, wherever they touch, all relaxation deepens. All tension eases. And you notice this change particularly in your face. All the facial muscles are relaxed. The jaw unclenched. The forehead smooth. The area around the eyes and between the eyes spacious. And your shoulders moving downwards, relaxing into a much more comfortable position. Changing your focus of awareness now to the rise and fall of the abdomen with the breath. Giving you a taste of stability. And without any effort now, change your awareness to the in-breath. Simply note that with each in-breath, your mind is becoming brighter. With each in-breath, your mind becoming sharp, clear. And with a relatively relaxed body and a sharp mind, this is perfect now. Now you set your motivation. What is it you want to achieve? Bringing that motivation to the front of your mind, just gently focus on that. And prayers are very helpful with this. And so if you're happy to do the prayers, we'll do the prayers. Sangye chodam soke chunam la janju bardu dagni kyapsuchi dagi jin soke pe sonam ki drola penchir sangye drupasho Sangye chodam soke chunam la janju bardu dagni kyapsuchi dagi jin soke pe sonam ki Drola Penchir Sangye Drupasho. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Thank you. So before we do a brief review, any feedback on your personal practice? Be quite good to hear if there was. Were the instructions clear enough? Reasonable? Would it have helped if I put it in the chat room? Not really, you took notes. Oh, good, good, good. Any feedback from that whatsoever? You found the meditations reasonable? Enjoyed the reading? Yeah, Anne?
I just wanted to say how much I enjoyed this morning. It was quite wonderful. Even coming on the retreat, you actually give yourself permission to do this, don't you? And to step out of life. And this morning, just to give myself permission just to meditate and dip and dabble. And it was just wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
It's quite soothing. Thank you. No, no, you're welcome. Yeah. More than welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Ellen. Anyone else? Just fairly reasonable, yes? Okay. Oh, that's good. That's good. There's such a big difference between listening to teachings and then doing some individual practice. Sometimes not so easy for many people. Okay. Easier to sit and listen, no? Yeah. Okay, we'll do a quick review now. So once more, just relax the body. And this review is more of a questioning review. So you're going to be asking yourself some questions. So settling the body, relaxing on the out-breath, allowing the mind to become bright on the in-breath. So remembering that shamatha was the ability to focus on a chosen object without losing or forgetting that object. We compared it to the modern Vipassana movement about mindfulness. And mindfulness in shamatha is definitely about keeping your mind on the chosen object. Don't forget it. The modern Vipassana movement is really about moment-to-moment, non-judgmental awareness of whatever's arising in your mind. Ask yourself, is it important for me to know that difference? Reflect on the three objects that we're going to be discussing. We focus mainly on the breath. Can you remember at least two positive benefits from developing shamatha on the breath? Can you remember? We've spent so much time talking about the two difficulties all the way through shamatha of agitation and laxity. Can you reflect on the difficulty of coarse, medium, subtle excitation? Just remembering there are differences here. With coarse excitation, we know that the attention completely disengages from the object. But we've talked about medium excitation as well. What's the difference? With medium excitation, involuntary thoughts still occupy the center of our attention, while the meditative object, although still in our mind, is in the periphery. And although we're coming on to laxity, still the same differentiation. Coarse, medium, subtle. Why is this helpful? To become really familiar with this, why is it helpful? What importance should we place on the ability to relax, become stable and vivid? Why? And then infuse it with even deeper relaxation, stillness, vigilance. What's the benefit? We remember that shamatha is morally neutral and was around well before the time of the Buddha. So what makes it a Buddhist practice? How can we make this a Buddhist practice? reflecting on the benefits of bodhicitta, the open heart. Broadly speaking, why is Kamali Shila's nine stages such a beneficial structure? Just broadly try to answer that. Why is it such a beneficial structure? We spent some time on the five obscurations. Can you remember any of them? The five obscurations? It's good to know them because we can then apply the remedy. So laxity. Dullness, the remedy of course examination. Afflictive uncertainty is a remedy for that. Precise investigation. Malice. What was the remedy for malice? So here we're looking at well-being. And the last one of excitement and anxiety. The remedy here is bliss. And we know that we can apply these. I'm not too sure about the bliss, but the other four certainly. We can apply them on quite a coarse level. But now we know that they arise automatically from our own mind. These remedies arise when our mind is refined. And we gain access to the form realm. All these remedies will cure themselves. It is the mind healing the mind. Do you remember we considered a tapestry in a dark room? Can you remember that? It was meant to highlight the relationship of shamatha to vipassana. Showing us that the light of our awareness allows us to see clearly and identify all aspects of that tapestry. Impossible if the dim light of our awareness is flickering, unstable. There are many analogies that are meant to help us remember these five obscurations because they're important. Some are helpful, some are not. Consider this simile in relation to the five. This simile is about the reflection of our face in a pool of water. So please imagine that you're looking into a pool of water. if laxity or dullness is present, it's as if the water is covered by moss. If afflictive uncertainty is present, looking into the water is turbid and muddy. If sensory craving is present, it's like the water mixed with many colours. So distracting. If malice is present, it's like looking into a pool of boiling water. If excitation and anxiety is present, it's like looking into the pool that's agitated. The water is being whipped by winds. In none of these cases can you see your true face. Thank you. So you probably note in most teachings, certainly in anything that's even slightly religious, there's a lot of analogies used, a lot of similes. Some people find them very helpful. A lot of the analogies used within Tibetan Buddhism is very culturally determined. And personally, I find them quite difficult. But that simile, I think, is quite useful. I can kind of relate to that. Okay, good. So, as we discussed yesterday, Lama Alan Wallace suggests, it's only a suggestion, that after the fourth stage, when your mindfulness is strong, you do have an option here. And it's heavily emphasized in Kagyu and Nyingma. You have an option to change the objects. This has been well attested as far back as Padmasambhava. Because by this time, the difficulties you'll be having is far more refined than the difficulties you had right at the start. And it may be beneficial to change that object. The choice is yours. Staying with your original object or changing, both have merits. Staying with the original object, then you're not roving from one object to another. You're not doing that. If you are, then you're really undermining any kind of sustained practice. I know that of which I speak. And the texts are quite clear. And this is heavily emphasized in the Gurupa. Don't change your object. They don't say you can't, they say don't. Because of this problem, people change not once, but twice and more, because it seems to be our difficulty is the object's problem, not yours. Okay, that's our habit, what to do. So there is great benefit in staying with the object all the way through, absolutely. But what I'll say is the judgment you have now And the judgment you have after achieving the fourth stage, different judgment. Just be aware you have a choice. So why does Lama Alan suggest this? Well, he suggests it because he sees there's merit in changing. The more mindful you become, the more the introspection is developed, the closer you come, or the closer you can come to understanding the nature of mind. And so when he suggests another object, he's actually saying, go subtler. That's what he's saying, go subtler. And he's asking you to choose, or to consider choosing a more subtle object, really, because it's a direct preparation for all Mahamudra and all Dzogchen, understanding of the nature of mind, understanding and the practices involved in understanding the nature of mind. So what he's saying is now, you could start now by choosing a subtler object if you're up for it. Not necessary, and I can't emphasize this enough. He's not telling you to do it. He's saying it's a possibility and there are benefits. Because from then on, you are working with the nature of mind. You're getting closer and closer. And so when you start slipping into Vipassana, it's an easier segue into Vipassana because you're already having a taste of the nature of mind. You're already resting in awareness. So useful. So both traditions, whether Dzogchen or Mahamudra, they all emphasize this contemplative practice because both of them are focused. They're both focused on the nature of consciousness. Even in Theravadan literature, there comes a time when you are focusing directly on the mind itself, resting in awareness. Lama Alan reminds us that that's called, in Theravadan, the unfastened mind. The unfastened mind. So all traditions have that. He is suggesting at this stage you might want to start. Now, this next object is really the mind itself and all mental events that arise within it. What is your object? The second object is the mind and events that arise within the mind. Now, in Lama Alan's books, he often talks about settling the mind in its natural state. This is the same thing. This is the same thing. This is what he's talking about. The whole of this practice is settling the mind in its natural state, but the object that you're going to focus on within that is the mind, and I tend to think of it as mind and contents, just because it's brief, but it's mind and all mental events that arise within it. Padmasambhava, the Panchen Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama have all said this is a wonderful, skillful method for novices in particular. When I first heard this many years ago, I thought this was only for really advanced practitioners. But no, they're saying for novices particularly, it helps us still the mind. It gives us that energy, that restful energy, awareness, not to be swept up and swept away by thoughts. This particular practice is very helpful for that. And this particular practice, as we talked about last time, helps to settle the mind in such a way that you get closer and closer to what's the subtle mind. From the Galup, subtle mind, from Kargyu and Dzogchen, that would be substrate. And this subtle mind, this quietness, has got qualities. And this quality is of bliss, luminosity, non-conceptuality. This is already present. You don't have to do anything about it. It's there. And by settling the mind, you get closer to that. Stay with the practice and you will get tastes. Lama Alan said that certain, people have got different propensities. Some people feel occasionally will feel that bliss coming through. Some people, that luminosity, some people, the non-conceptuality. And he laughs a lot. He said, because everybody wants the bliss. That's what he said. They'll sit there waiting for the bliss. And, you know, maybe not come. But it's said that the luminosity, it's said that the bliss, there's no comparison. And the luminosity just makes, it's like a clarity. It's a radiance, a clarity. It's what makes everything else clear. It's not just a white light. And non-conceptuality, it's like the mind going on holiday. No concepts arising. There's a period of time when there's no concepts arising. And you'd think that would be boring. And it's not. It's like going on holiday. It's the best holiday you can get. Yeah. Very healing. Very healing. So they say, anyway. So they say. So now I'm going to talk about, I'm going to front load this particular meditation. Before I do that, for those people who are reading the book, whenever you are meditating on mind itself, there are two additional meditations that are really helpful, Well, can be. One is called gentle vase breathing. Not to be mistaken with full vase breathing. That's kind of tough. But gentle vase breathing. That's in Alan's book. And nine round breathing. These two meditations are very, very helpful if you're staying with the mind. Very helpful. Now, they're not essential, so I'm not going to do it here. But in a few days' time, we will practice it together. Okay? Because it's not integral part, but it's been found to be helpful for people who are spending a lot of time meditating on the mind. So that's gentle vase breathing and nine round breathing. It's something we'll look into later. Definitely. So here you've got mind in its contents. How do we start? Exactly the same as before. Relaxation, stability, vividness. Imbued with deeper relaxation, with stillness, and with vigilance. So that doesn't change. So what you're doing here is you need to become familiar with, as you became familiar with agitation and laxity, and it's got to be there, it's got to be in your mind all the time here, because that's what you're working with. And relaxation, stability, you need that with you. Here's something else now that you need to keep with you. And it's like a mantra, and the mantra is without distraction and without grasping. That's the mantra. Without distraction, without grasping. As I said to you before, if you haven't velcroed yourself to thoughts, ideas, and emotions, then you can breathe it out. You can breathe it out if you haven't velcroed yourself to it, if you haven't owned it, if you haven't mixed it with that's mine, I'm like that. If you're simply noticing, then you deal with it without distraction. It's not taking you away from the object and without grasping onto it. How do you do that? By arousing your awareness on the in-breath, if what's happening is due to dullness, and loosening up and relaxing if it's an agitation, and refocusing. All the texts say without grasping, without distraction. The instructions are very brief, because what you'll find is going from object to object, going from the mind, going from the breath to the mind and its contents to awareness, you're doing less and less. We're used to doing more and more. No, in this practice, you're doing less and less. So the idea is to be still, be circumspect. Whatever arises in the mind, and everything can arise in the mind, you do this practice long enough, the most disgusting thoughts, the most vivid things that can happen, sounds, colors, beautiful thoughts, what you're moving, you're stirring this mind here, and you're stirring these winds, these energies, and they'll come up. And what we tend to do is, oh, that's horrible. Oh, that's marvelous. Oh, I want to have that. Nothing like that. You're just cool. You're still and you're cool. You observe their nature, and release. There is introspection. Do you remember? Mindfulness is keeping your mind on that object. Introspection notices when the mind has strayed. Yes? And you bring it back. Here, the introspection really is to do with your quality of attention. Really, it's to do with your quality of attention. Padmasambhava says, and Lama Alan quotes him a lot, he said, when you're doing this practice, you're doing so little. He says, don't be like a hitchhiker. And you're catching a thought, catching a ride from any thought that comes along. Ooh, ooh, you know, don't be like that hitchhiker. Don't catch a ride with any thought at all. But you're not tight. You're just kind of loose. So that's what you don't do. You don't behave like a hitchhiker. So what do you do when these thoughts come? And so in the great Dzogchen tradition, which is really where this comes from, I'm not a Dzogchen practitioner as such, but I recognize the benefits of this. What it says is, and Lama Alan teaches, is your attention is like a kestrel that's facing the wind. Now, as the wind changes, the kestrel has to alter its stance to keep steady. But that alteration the kestrel makes is a little tip of the wing here, a little flurry of the tail here. Very small, very minor adjustments, but overall staying still. That's the analogy he uses. I personally, not many analogies I like. I prefer people to just say what to do and not to do. But that analogy, I get that. Have you ever seen it? You know, even a red kite, but they say, who's facing into the wind. And how can they stay so still? A slight movement of the wings, a slight movement of the tail, that's what your attention's to be like in this particular practice. Anything that comes up, this is how you change your attention. It's nothing massive. It's very, very light. Very light touching. So another way to front load this particular meditation is to understand that with mindfulness of the breath that we've done, stability is generated because of the continuous of your attention on the object. That's where stability arises from. But in settling the mind in its natural state, the stability is not in relation to any object. It's not in relation to the mind, and it's not in relation to the context. It really is engineered and maintained through the stillness of your awareness. Through the stillness of your awareness. That's what will maintain your stability. Not in relation to the object, but in relation to the stillness of your awareness. So there is an object, of course. The object here is that you're going to focus on is the mind and its contents. Anything that rises within it. Thoughts, ideas, emotions, images, smells, colors, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You observe, but I'll talk you through that. Okay. Now, remember, this is drawn from the Dzogchen tradition, but in a variety, just with small changes, Lama Alan, I remember he told me in 2011, but you find this in all traditions. Now, I couldn't find it. So I had to get back to him and say, I can't find it. You know, and he was able to give me a reference of Lama Tsongkhapa, who was describing this particular practice. And of course, once I saw that, I was happy as Larry, you know. Lama Tsongkhapa says, it's okay by me, you know, who am I to argue? So it is seen and recognized in all tradition, but It's front and center in Dzogchen, front and center in Dogen Dzogchen. Lama Allen suggests that by stage five, this is a particular good one. If you're going to change an object, this is a particular good one to choose. Now, there's a reason for that. Not only are you doing less, but you're right there in the mind itself. Why is this going to become really important? Well, if you remember, coarse, medium, and subtle applies to laxity as well as to excitation. Now, by stage five, you've got rid of coarse excitation. And now Lama Allen says the biggest challenge that we have now, in fact, one of the biggest challenges within the whole nine stages hits you now. And that's coarse dullness, coarse laxity. It starts to kick in at stage five. You begin, it's always been there. It's not just suddenly appeared, it's always been there, but now it's front and center. Now you're noticing. And he says at this stage, you have to be careful. Because of this, what tends to happen, you can slip without noticing, just slowly slip into kind of like a dullness where you largely disengage from the object. The text says it's like sinking. And that sinking of the mind leads to a kind of sluggishness. The sluggishness leads to a kind of lethargy. And the lethargy, without you know it, leads to kind of sleepiness. But your experience of that can be very powerful. It can be very peaceful. This is a very peaceful experience. And because it's so peaceful and so quiet that sometimes people mistake this for shamatha, because the qualities of shamatha, definitely you've got quiescence, you've got tranquility, you've got serenity. And people who are not very bright, this is what Lama Allen says, who are not very bright can mistake this as being shamatha, but it's not. Why? Because it does not have the stability, the degree of stability you need, that's not there. The high degree, outstanding degree of vividness that you would need is not there. This is not shamatha. We don't make that mistake. So before we do this meditation, just remember, this meditation, Lama Allen puts it forward for many reasons, but it's a great preparation for any form of Mahamudra meditation, certainly from Dzogchen. Both traditions really are looking at contemplative practices aimed at realizing the nature of the mind. That's what they're doing. Slight differences, but really the essence is the same. This particular practice is designed to release the mind from its habitual ignorance, attachment, aversion, going here, going there. This is how we've lived our lives. This particular meditation really is designed that you let that go. That mental imbalance soothes out. And in his book, Lama Allen says, and he says it all the time, if you listen to any of his teaching, it allows the mind to settle down. It's like putting the snorkel on, you know, getting deeper, settled down to a much more calm, what he calls the, well, what Dzogchen calls the ground state, the more subtle mind. And that's where your bliss, your luminosity, your non-conceptuality, that's the qualities. Okay. I wanted to front load that because the meditation itself is so simple that front loading is gives me most of my work, really. So please, choose a position. If you've not tried the supine, I really highly recommend it, but up to yourself. You want to become competent in both sitting and supine. So please take a few minutes to get yourself very, very comfortable, relaxed, your body in a very good position. allowing your consciousness to sink down through your body, releasing any tension as you go. Let it sink, release on the out-breath. Become aware of where your body contacts the earth element and where one body part touches another. On the in-breath, allow awareness to emerge and flow through the body. Your attitude is one of joy. On the in-breath, awareness emerging, flowing through the body. Allowing the breath to fill the chest, move the diaphragm. Oh, it's the other way around. The belly, the diaphragm, the chest, like a pot, filling a pot from the bottom upwards. Scan and release any tension, especially in the face and the brow. Continue to breathe and release on the out-breath. Your attitude is one of ease and vigilance. If you're sitting upright, just slightly raise your sternum, that will help. If you're lying down, remind yourself this is a formal meditation posture, not rest. Noting the tactile sensations of the feet, all the way up to the crown, and releasing those sensations on the out-breath. At the same time, avoiding all movement. In a moment, you'll take three consecutive breaths through your nostrils, and as you breathe in, you let awareness again permeate your entire body, noticing the sensations arising. And after the third breath, allow your breath to flow naturally. Don't impose any rhythm. Observe the entirety of each in-breath and out-breath, the beginning, the middle, the end. Gently noting, without any investigation, simply note if the breath is long or short, deep or shallow, slow or fast. allowing the body to relax as if it was asleep, and with the mind highly vigilant. Any thoughts, ideas, emotions that arise, just relax and release on the out-breath. Again and again, counteracting any difficulty by relaxing even more deeply on the out-breath. And the in-breath, let it flow in naturally, like a tide. Become aware of the rise and fall of the abdomen with the breath. Being aware of the full movement of in and out, the beginning, the middle, the end. If helpful, you can count as we've done before. If not, no problem. Release all involuntary thoughts on the out-breath, relaxing on the out-breath, refocusing for any excitation. Any laxity or dullness, then just arouse your attention on the in-breath. And refocus. Raising your awareness to a subtler object to increase vividness. So now become aware of the sensation of the breath at the nostrils or the upper lip. Impose no rhythm on your breath. Becoming aware of the ongoing flow of sensations, the beginning, the middle, and the end. Counting from 1 to 10 and back to 1, if that helps. If you're losing the sensation at all anytime, once more, relax, release, and start to observe more closely until the vivid sensations are evident again. Settling the mind in its natural state. Let your eyes be open. No choice here. Let your eyes be open. Your gaze soft, vacant. Your gaze in front of you, slightly downwards. You can blink anytime you want. Don't strain your eyes. It's as if you're in a relaxed daydream with open eyes. Your attention now is on the mind, the domain of all mental events. If you're worried that you're in the right place or not, with your eyes open, imagine a flower. Mentally gaze at that flower with your eyes open. Allow the flower to disappear and remain in the space where the flower has disappeared. Just stay there. You are in the right place. You're aware, you're alert, you're not distracted. The space of the mind is vast. Remain there. Observe carefully the events in the mind. Whatever's happening, you observe from a very neutral stance. You don't involve yourself. You don't regulate or evaluate in any way. Simply observe, let your thoughts be, don't engage. Avoid attraction, avoid repulsion. Simply observe. Have no preference for the absence of thought or the presence of thought. That's not the problem. Being distracted by them or grasping onto them, that's the problem. Thoughts are not a problem. thoughts are not continuous. They come and go sporadically. But your stability of attention is not on a specific object, it's on the quality of your awareness. So even when there are no thoughts, or where there's thoughts on the move, even if you're not distracted or grasping, because the thoughts are not there, awareness still is. The mind is still there. So keep your mind on the mind. In this practice, you will experience periods when the mind seems to be totally empty. So occasionally arouse the vividness of your attention on the in-breath. Try to detect subtle mental events that are lurking just below the threshold of awareness. Give it a go. Your challenge is always to arouse the clarity of your attention without losing stability. So arouse your clarity of attention on the in-breath. Try to detect those subtle mental events lurking just below the threshold. Sometimes, even when you arouse your attention, you arouse your awareness, you still can't detect any mental appearance. No problem. Simply relax and be aware of that empty space. Remember, your object is the space of the mind and anything that appears within it. For the last 5 minutes, try to employ these instructions. making a special effort for the last 2 minutes. Thank you. Good. So we're going to do some breakout rooms now. And I'd like you, and it's going to be 20 minutes this time. And what I want you to do is share your experience of this meditation. Just truthfully see how it felt to you. Okay? You're going to be in pairs, so you should be able to, you know, share that quite clearly. I particularly want you to be honest and identify the challenges that you felt with that meditation. And then if somebody could make a note so you could feedback. Is that clear? It's going to be broadcast to you. So basically, I'm looking at you to discuss and share your experience of that meditation. And honestly say what challenges, if any, that you had. And if you could make a brief note just to remind yourself so that you could feedback when we get back together again. Okay? So 20 minutes this time. Yeah. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your discussion. It would be very helpful if you could give some feedback on this particular practice, how you felt about it, any challenges you had, because none of us are that unique. And so it will help everyone here. So if, who would like to start? Okay, Christine.
Yes, I talked with Shai and I think she has left now. She had to leave. And when I did the meditation, I usually when I do this meditation, I have a dark gray space, and I was very relieved to that this is a normal experience. And she also said she had this, she's doing regular practice for an hour a day,
And she says it changes over time. If you do this longer and longer, it will change. But I was always very worried about this gray space. And I also had this these thoughts lurking at the periphery, as you said. And I'm just very relieved to hear that this is all normal. And sometimes when I have a thought, I only realize a little after, oh, I had a thought. But yeah, so it was a happy experience for me. And I enjoyed exchanging with Shai.
Thank you. How do you find keeping your eyes open?
As I'm very short-sighted, I take off my glasses and it really helps. It's not a problem. I can't focus anyway, so.
So disability could be helpful. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Great. Good. Thank you very much, Christine. Thank you. Elizabeth.
Thank you very much, Christine. That was really good. We talked. I was really pleased to meet Marco as Stella yesterday. You know, that's always a pleasure to meet, and Sherry as well. We mentioned straight away, I think, with Marco, the eyes open, and we felt that it was more difficult to obviously relax and unfocus. And you know, Christine's example is great. Thank you so much. We've our eyes open. I'm someone who does meditate mainly with eyes closed.
Yes.
And mentioned as well that it could potentially having the eyes open bring tension in the face, and how much tension we can hold in our face and we can be unaware.
Yes.
So I was mentioning massaging or touching those muscles here at the junction of the jaw, and how it can be beneficial to massage them just to realize how much tension we hold.
Okay.
To relax. We mentioned that focusing on the body and the sensation was so much easier than focusing on the mind and thought. Because the body and its sensation are something we know, that let's say conceptual, you know, we can identify them, then the thoughts and the mind are non-conceptual, and therefore they've got no color, no smell, no texture, and that's why we can let them go. And we know because they don't have those physical, let's say, attribution, they don't exist.
And that's our habit. That is our habit. We live in a desire realm. This is not because we're bad people. It's not because we're stupid. It's because we live in a desire realm. This realm we live in is all based on the five senses. Really. Everything we do is based on the five senses. We want to gratify it and we want to avoid problems with it. All our pleasure comes in through the five senses. This is how we think. And our upset comes from not being getting gratification in the five senses. Everything's to do with the five senses. Actually, that takes a lot of energy. We don't realize it because, you know, it's just habit. So this particular meditation, really, you're doing less than you would do in any other state of life. You're actually doing very little, but because it's not familiar and you're not quite sure you're in the right place, not quite, you know, that often we'll fabricate mental images because we want something to grasp onto. But what's the mantra? Without distraction, without grasping, resting in the night. There is always mind. If you're alive, right, you haven't died, mind is there. It's just that's not what we're used to focusing on. We're not used to just resting in mind, not at all. We want the distractions. We were all born into a desire realm for a reason, right? Some of the reasons are good, some not so helpful. But the more you withdraw from the five senses, yet keep the mind bright, you're letting go of a lot of human difficulties.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Elizabeth. Thank you for the feedback.
Yeah, I have to mention that somebody mentioned yesterday that they were feeling more like toward the dullness and tiredness. And I felt yesterday very tired. And I think it's due to the practice.
Yes. I would also say, I remember not the first time I heard Lama Alan, but there was a big teaching in Jamyang, London. Can't remember, Wendy will remember, but I think it was about 2009, 2010, like that. And a lot of the questions that were being asked of Alan, the whole place was full, but a lot of the questions were due to, I'm getting tired, it's making me sleepy, blah, blah, blah. And it was the first time I ever heard a Dharma teacher say, it's because you're not getting enough sleep.
I went to sleep very early last night.
Good. He said most of the Western world are sleep deprived. We're sleep deprived. Yes.
For me, which is very, very early. You know, I was, and I know it's due to the practice. Now I've developed a rash here on my chin. And that as well, I'm wondering if it's not due to lately I've been starting breathing, trying to breathe mainly through the nose, not through the mouth. And I'm doing more lung exercise. And now you see I'm dealing with grief. Well, because my mum passed away 3 months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's hard.
It is.
Hard, Elizabeth. That's hard.
But so I'm thinking, is that the work as well, that breathing work, make that? I've developed that rash who came out yesterday night, this morning.
Life. Live long enough, you'll grow horns. I'm sure of it. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm reading this book. I don't know if anybody knows it.
Breath, the New Science. Who's the author?
James Nestor. Let me check.
Maybe send it to me through chat. Give me the...
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. More than welcome.
I will send it through the chat. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Jenny?
Right, so Anne may want to add some various bits. So first of all, to do with the posture, we talked about the eyes open, and both of us agreed that we found that a little bit more difficult. And both of us happened to be doing the posture in the supine position. So I think that raises issues about, I mean, I ended up leaving my glasses on, but anyway. So I think I'd need to think about lighting, and I've got a lamp on in the corner of the room. So, but the eyes open, I understand the reasons for it, but just, it particularly in the supine position, seems a little bit more tricky. We both agreed that we were less used to meditating in the supine position. And what we noticed was that both of us, me, it's more to do with normally in sitting, aware of things rising up and hearing clicks and almost physically hearing blockages. And Anne has an experience of heat. Anyway, we both have physical things that we can tell that things are happening on a sort of a fairly subtle energy level. And both of us, we both noticed that was less apparent in the supine position, but maybe it's just because the supine position is less familiar. I didn't feel that there was such a sense of the winds in alignment or the chakras in alignment or something. Anyway, I don't know. It's hard to talk about, but it's just sort of felt experience in the meditation. In terms of the contents of the mind, I think we both again seem to have a sort of a similar experience of that sort of post lunch sleepy is too strong, but definitely a certain dullness there, and so although there was some awareness on the particular contents, I think Anne's phrase was the sort of fleetingly going off onto the story, but I suppose that there was still awareness there, but just fleetingly being taken away a little bit. And I think certainly in both cases there was a noticing of less sharpness, but we agreed again that might be a bit to do with the post-lunch and the supine position. I mean, I did the supine position this morning, for example, and I didn't find it. I didn't have that same sense of slight dullness then. So I think, Anne, is there anything you want to add to that?
So we'll definitely go into a bit more about the eyes and things like that tomorrow. But like you, Jenny, I think I said to you before on different occasions that when I first started doing this, when I was doing my first 2-month retreat with Lama Allen, I was having a great time until it came to the supine position and focusing on the mind. So tired, just difficult. But, you know, it's true. As Shanti Deva says, there is nothing that doesn't become easy with practice. But I did look at the people around me and they seemed to get over it quite quickly. It took me a while. May I be very honest with you, this was not easy for me at all. But I did persevere because I wasn't going to go back with my next meeting with Lama Allen. Tell him I was still sleepy. Because he told me if I was still sleepy the next time I came to see him, because we used to have weekly meetings, eh? Everybody did. Then it was because I wasn't practicing enough. Can you imagine? But people got over that quite quickly. It took me a while. But it's worth it. It's worth it. So much so. Thank you. Thank you, Jenny. Anyone else? Oh, Alfredo, you had your hand up before.
Now I'm unmuted. Hello.
Hello.
I was with Sherry Lim, which was very good for me. We started with the importance of resting well, both physically and mentally, to be able to kind of get the best of our practice, of our efforts. But then we jumped into this visualization for example, visualizing a flower in the space in front of me and letting it disappear and then taking the place. That was really, really good for me. I hadn't tried it before. To create both some perspective and vividness too. That brought a lot of vividness to me. While also this feeling of perspective. And we were discussing a little bit about that for some time, and Sherry Lim asked me if this vividness if it was somehow physical. And it sounds like to me like Sherry Lim, who had tried this visualization before with you, Venerable Mary, have heard this, that for some people it gets kind of physical and for some it's more like space or voidness. And for me, it was something in the middle. There was both this physical sphere in front of me, but also, well, of course, there wasn't any flower anywhere, never. So it wasn't physical either, but something in the middle, and still was very, very, very useful for me.
I'm glad. It's. I think what it does, it gives you confidence that you were so used to listening and seeing, there has to be an object, you know? And when that object is your mind, where is it? You know, you know, it's very difficult. So the text do say, and Lama Allen says, it's more about confidence. If my eyes are open and I visualize it could be anything. I tend to prefer something like a flower or a fruit, something that's not, you don't have attachment to, something there. And you're mentally gazing and it disappears. You stay there. You just stay there. And that seems to give you like access. Just, it's as if all the barriers have come down. So it's helpful. It's helpful. But for some people are so attuned to this, you say, set your mind in its natural state and they just do this. Okay. They're there already, you know. So once you get used to this, really, in seconds, you'll be able to just sit and you know that what you're observing is your mind. You know it. In the beginning, you might have visions. There might be this kind of, that's all just helping you get to it. But once you're there, and it's confidence, knowing that you're actually in the right place. Thanks, Alfredo.
Thanks.
Stella.
Yes, I was meeting with Stefan, and we talked about Stefan experienced a lot of physical relaxation, more than he'd experienced before. So in places that he found difficult to relax before, and we talked about how the relaxation is a foundation really for stability.
Completely.
And the sort of vividness. And for me, I was aware of kind of like fuzzy thoughts in my mind that were like a sort of conveyor belt of, you know, just kind of like thoughts buzzing through kind of thing. And occasionally more, I kind of called them capital letter thoughts that were sort of like more demanding, but still not kind of engaging with them. So
just,
I was kind
just of trying to do this, trying to catch your attention.
Yeah, kind of like.
<That's managed. laughs> I know.
So I was kind of aware of in a way, those two sort of levels of thoughts, that the sort of fuzzy ones that were just sort of buzzing through and the sort of occasional sort of demanding ones that I wasn't going to engage with, but which were sort of there.
Yes.
I guess that's kind of really what we talked about, just that's kind of where it was for me, and for Stefan it was the sort of physical relaxation that came from that experience.
I just never realized you could be that relaxed, you know. I just, you know, when you think I can't get any more relaxed than this, and you find that you can, you really can. And the more you can do that, then the stability is so much easier. And once the stability, the vividness will come. Yeah. But without the relaxation, no. I think this is why he was always saying to us, you know, don't worry, you know, are you getting enough sleep? Because we'll be talking about this later, you know, what you could do in your ordinary life that's going to help you do this. And one of the things really is to get enough sleep to rest. To rest. I'd never heard of it. A Dharma teacher tell me that, not in 40 years that I heard anybody tell me to rest. Many of them will say things like, you know, always sleeping is a waste of time. You know, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. But in shamatha, you know, rest. Come fresh to the practice. Oh, it was ticking all the boxes for me. You can do it. You can do this lying down. It's not too much effort when it's focusing on the mind. And you want me to sleep. Just sign me up. This sounds great to me. It may not have been the right motivation, but I was well impressed by all that. Thank you. So one more feedback, if there's anyone that would like to kind of run the gambit there. Okay. So thank you very much for that feedback. I'm pleased. How was 20 minutes for you? Was it too long, too short? Better than 15? Definitely, yeah. Okay. Right. So, thank you for all of that. We'll go on to this a bit more deeply tomorrow. We're going to practice it a few times, spending less and less time on the relaxation, a bit more time on the actual practice, not because you're ready, but because to get a taste of it, and discuss something, you know, more discussion around this topic. It's worth spending the time on this, because what Lama Allen is putting forward is, if you wish to change your object, this is a good time. At this stage, everything's right at this stage. This would be a good one, but be careful. Biggest problem, coarse laxity, this kind of drifting off at this stage. Very, very, this is your main challenge. So thank you very much for today. So if you could just maybe remember, let your mind touch again the motivation that you had right at the very beginning. And hopefully this motivation was imbued with bodhicitta. Never finish any session without dedication. Always. Motivation is a sandwich. Your practice is a sandwich. Motivation, your practice, dedication. Don't change that. That's the winning combination. So if you're happy to do so, we can do some prayers. Gewade nyurda lama sangi drukyune drowa chingyan ma. Due to these merits, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. Yan chog sem chog rin po she ma ke pa dam ke gyur che ke pa nyam pa me pa yam mo ni gong du pel wa shu. May the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, that has not arisen, arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. For as long as space endures, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Thank you very much. So hopefully see you 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Primed and ready.